This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about bouillon.
Yes. Another listener suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to include the letter that Ginger wrote because it got my brain turning. Some questions I had not considered.
Uh-huh.
So Ginger wrote, I'm dying to know why pork broth isn't more common, especially in American cuisine. Chicken and beef broth are obviously widely available and used, and even turkey broth I feel I've seen more commonly than pork broth. Is there a reason America doesn't use it? Is it because of the fat or salt content, or is it something about the history of broth? Only you can answer my query. Well, I had not considered this, and I did start paying attention to, because I do use a lot of bouillon, and I have not ever used pork bouillon, and I never really thought about it until Ginger pointed this out. But I did see that it is available at the store.
Yeah.
I just generally use chicken bouillon, but I saw that pork was an option.
Yeah, I personally possess chicken, beef, and a like specialty pho bouillon.
Ooh.
So, yeah. That's my favorite for, like, actually sometimes when we're playing D&D, like if I want like snack, but I don't want to just be like crunching on popcorn in everyone's faces via Zoom, mm-hmm. Then yeah, I'll make myself a cup of pho bouillon.
Oh, well, that's very considerate of you. I do a similar thing, especially if I get cold and I just really want something warm and salty, but I'm not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make like bouillon and I'll just sip on it, and it's lovely.
It is lovely. Oh gosh. Yeah, I have to say, Ginger, I'm sorry, we don't really get to the bottom of the pork versus chicken and beef situation in this episode.
Yes, well, I mean, that gives you something to look forward to. You know, Savor's on the case, and we'll get to the bottom of it. I did look it up. I did look it up, and most people seemed, and I'm talking like Reddit threads.
Oh, okay.
So not like super official or research or anything, but it seems to have just kind of be a cultural thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's used, pork broth is used a lot more in these Reddit threads, according to these users, in like Spanish or Latin American cuisine. And in, here in the U.S., we just went with chicken and beef.
Yeah. Primarily. And I wonder, yeah, we do have to look into this, because I feel like if Americans are going to incorporate pork into their dishes, they're either going to do it through like pork bones, like in a salt pork kind of way, like in a split pea soup kind of way, like a ham hock.
Yeah.
Or yeah. We're just gonna heckin' add bacon to it.
Yeah. That's true. Especially in at least in my anecdotal experience in Southern cuisine, where that was very big part of my vegetables growing up. And also, I know I've talked about it before on the show, but my little brother is vegetarian and kind of announced this in what felt to me very randomly at Thanksgiving, which was a very stressful time. But the bouillon aspect and the things like that, that was the biggest thing where I kept having to be like, nope, vegetarian.
Yeah.
You can't just put chicken stock in there.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is interesting. We'll have to circle back and revisit this pork broth in the U.S. question. But for now.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Let us get to our question. Bouillon. What is it?
Well, bouillon is a bit of a tricky term, but what we're talking about here today is a broth or stock that's concentrated and made shelf-stable, usually in a dry format, often in these individually wrapped cubes. So I guess, yeah, you could say that bouillon is a type of, like, salty, savory meat or vegetable tea.
Meat or vegetable tea. It sounds weird, but it is. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. It makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. It also comes in powders and pastes. It's often used as a seasoning in soups or stews or sauces, other liquidy recipes to give an extra oomph for a low cost. Because bouillon is concentrated, it does often pack an impressive salty and savory punch, especially for the buy-in cost. Mm-hmm. And it does come in as many flavors as broths and stocks themselves come in, flavored with all kinds of base ingredients, plus herbs and spices. And terminology note, the first, the difference between broth and stock in American usage is that stock is traditionally made using bones, which means you get more gelatin in the resulting product, which makes it silkier. Broth, mm-hmm. meanwhile, is traditionally made without bones, which is why the term bone broth makes me really tired. I'm like, there's a word for that, and it's stock. It's stock. You could just call it stock.
But it doesn't have the alliteration, Lauren.
I, you know, this is why I dropped out of marketing. Right here.
Yes, bone broth.
I did drop out of marketing, not because of bone broth, but anyway. any type of meat, any type of vegetables in any combination can go into a bouillon. Chicken, beef, and vegetable are the three most common flavors in the U.S., but various markets also do indeed have pork and fish bouillons. And you can also find a specially seasoned bouillon like the aforementioned pho bouillon in Vietnamese markets, or like a heady, smoky, fish-flavored Naija pot in Nigerian markets, all kinds of different stuff.
I got to get my hands on some of that pho bouillon. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh.
But you know I love pho, and I need it.
It's got that beautiful, like, kind of delicate floral spice, like kind of clovey sort of thing to it. I think I found it at the Buford Highway Farmers Market.
Oh.
Yeah.
A journey for me. Especially these days.
Oh, goodness. Have you gone so far since quarantine?
No, I don't know that I have. I think maybe like once I've gone a distance, but other than that, it's the however long my apartment is. Oh. So yes, maybe it's time to journey forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, you've got that second dose of vaccine, so.
And I could really use some pho, some bouillon for it, yes.
Oh, no. I will say that the meaty flavor of bouillon doesn't always necessarily come from meat. Savory, a.k.a. umami, flavors come from many sources. Yes, meat, but also things like mushrooms, tomatoes, cheeses, beans, many fermented foods. And on an industrial scale, it's cheaper to get those flavors out of plants. Specifically, what our taste buds and brains react to when we experience savory is glutamic acid, which is a type of amino acid that just about all living things use in their cells to help create proteins. So it comes bound up in proteins, but you can extract it from those proteins using a process called hydrolysis, which is just a fancy way of saying that that water molecules are involved in breaking other molecules apart. So you can use cheap sources like wheat or soy or other vegetation or even farm-friendly bacteria or yeast to get you just a whole bunch of proteins and then isolate out the glutamic acid. And often food manufacturers wind up using any of several salt forms of glutamic acid called glutamates. And yes, monosodium glutamate or MSG is one of these. Many bouillons do include some amount of extracts or fat from animals to help provide the correct flavor and texture, but you know, just to give it that chickeny punch.
Chickeny punch.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately am nervous, and I think that says a lot about me. I do have a lot of leftover feelings from that game, the Zelda game, Legend of Zelda. And those chickens, they didn't like it. They would give you the chicken punch if you tried to pick them up.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And you didn't want it. Oh. Mm-mm.
Chicken violence. Gosh. I will say I am mildly terrified of birds, and I certainly
That's
do not
true.
Trust chickens.
Are they like up there of your least untrustworthy birds?
They're not really big enough to do the same kind of damage as like geese or something like that. Like, I mean, like, I believe that a chicken would eat my eyeballs if it could. But I think geese are a much more clear and present danger.
You think so? Do you encounter a lot of geese in your day to day?
I mean, not like right now. I mean, I'm not really like going out to geese Latin areas at the current moment. But but waterfowl mean business, man. Meanwhile, bouillon. More terminology fun. In French, the word for broth is bouillon. So if you are, for example, attempting to do a bunch of reading about it on the internet, that can get a little tricky. The term bouillon is also used for a particular type of restaurant in France, originally a sort of like market hall dining room that served quick, cheap but nutritious lunches, including cups of broth.
Yes. Yes, and I was talking to Lauren about this beforehand, and I cannot believe I never put that together because I knew about that. But they were just so separate in my mind for some reason that I just was oblivious to this whole bouillon broth French connection. Oh, French connection.
Oh.
You learn something all the time on this show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And yes, you can make bouillon at home. It does not need to be store-bought. Recipes abound. You can reduce a homemade broth or stock to a concentrate and then dehydrate it, or make a vegetarian powder with stuff like nutritional yeast and herbs and spices. If this is a thing that you are interested in, it is out there.
Definitely. Well, what about the nutrition?
It depends. Bouillon is a concentrate and tends to be heavy on the sodium, partially because sodium is a good preservative as well as a flavor enhancer. Usually, they also contain a bit of sugar for the same reasons and fat for flavor and adhesion in terms of cubes and pastes anyway. And the small bit of fat and protein in there will help keep you going. Not going to particularly do anything to fill you up. But yeah, I don't know. Read your labels. Hydrate.
always hydrate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for your, I just feel like every time I have warm bouillon, my heart, my mental health.
Yes.
Yes. we do have some numbers for you.
Mm-hmm.
So bouillon / stock / broth cubes are a staple pretty much worldwide. According to some sources, Knorr, which is one of the biggest sellers of bouillon cubes, and I think that's what I grew up with mostly, sells about 600 million cubes a second around the world. 10 of those wow. in the U.S. Yep. Knorr reported that during the pandemic, sales jumped up by 70%.
Hmm.
Which makes sense, but wow. Many regions around the world have a preferred brand of bouillon. In Central and West Africa, it's Maggi, where 100 million cubes are sold a day. But there are also local varieties. Mexico and Indonesia are the top markets for Knorr, though the U.S. is in fourth. And I found a lot of really delightful stories about people in different areas around the world and the bouillon that they grew up with and how it's just a staple in so many nostalgic food items for them. Yes. A separate episode because I also got tired, Lauren, but bone broths have been a pretty substantial, they've been having a pretty substantial moment for the past few years. And we're going to touch on some of that, but I think it could be its a whole thing.
Oh, 20,000% separate episode. And I mean, and we have talked about that a little bit in our Aspic episode and maybe somewhere else. It's like pinging in the back of my brain that might have been a topic somewhere else. But at any rate, yeah.
Yes, yes. And certainly in episodes like pho,
we might not
have touched on that, but we're talking about aspects of this whole broth bouillon stock conversation. Oh, but we've got a lot of history. We've got enough history for this one already.
We certainly do, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts? Time ends. Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global.
When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, if we're talking soup, the history most likely goes back as long as humans have been doing even the most basic cooking.
Yeah, yeah. Like, discovery of fire.
Soup.
Yeah.
Because soup is easy to make and easy to digest for all ages and types of peoples, rich and poor, nomadic and sedentary, and often recommended medicinally for the ill, which it still is to this day. Mm-hmm. And by soup, I could also just mean broth, a very simple, basic thing. Warriors in what is now Hungary during the 14th century may have boiled beef down to pieces, dried it out, and ground it up into a powder and carried it with them to be mixed with water if necessary. I know we talked about that in our ramen episode, which is also sort of a legend around samurai. Mm-hmm. If that actually happened. But, you know, there are stories like that throughout history. The predecessors to bouillon cubes go back to at least the late 17th century when people cooked with and ate what were called pocket soups. Portable soups are veal glue, G-L-E-W.
Hmm.
A 1694 cookbook included a recipe for veal glue that instructed readers to boil down a leg of veal, reduce and cool the broth until it came together in a gelatinous slab about the size of a hand, and then wrapping that slab in dry paper where it could keep for, quote, many years.
All right, sure.
Yeah. Hannah Glass, who wrote The Art of Cookery Made Plain and Easy, first published in 1747, had a more complicated take on portable soup. The ingredients included two legs of beef and anchovies, onions, and a variety of spices like thyme, mace, cloves, black and white pepper, marjoram, along with, quote, the dry, hard crust of a two-penny loaf. All boiled together until it resulted in, quote, a very rich, good jelly, which took about 8 or 9 hours. From there, it was strained, further cooked until it resembled a, quote, stiff glue, dried and packaged. However, it doesn't appear that these early versions of portable soup are well-liked, and they were more viewed as a food of hardship or for sailors or explorers. Napoleon Bonaparte himself reportedly once said, "An army travels on its stomach, soup makes the soldier." In Patrick O'Brien's 20-book series that takes place on the seas during the Napoleonic Wars, that was first published in 1969 with Master and Commander, in these books, portable soup was often derided. One character described portable soup thusly, "I thought it was lukewarm glue, but it goes down quite well if you don't breathe." not high praise.
Well.
And later in the series, the doctor on the boat is tossing slabs of portable soup into the sea to let off some steam. I haven't read them, but from what I could tell, it was about the portable soup and other things, but not well-liked. For his journey to Australia in 1772, Captain James Cook transported with him 1,000 pounds of portable soup. Prior to eating, it was boiled with water and some flour was mixed in. The records indicate that sailors who turned down the soup were flogged.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Don't waste food.
Jeez, waste food. But can you imagine if something is bad enough that you're a sailor on a ship and you're like, nope.
No, thank you.
I will not do it. Not everyone hated it, though. One supporter was William Byrd II, who was a planter out of Virginia. After a difficult journey, He was like exploring in the swamp, I believe. And he, after this journey, he recommended what was called glue broth specifically to travelers in 1726 as, quote, a wholesome kind of food, a very small weight and very great nourishment that will secure them from starving in case they should be so unlucky as to meet with no game. He even had a recipe and postulated that the resulting, quote, solid substance could last quite long, with 2 pounds being enough for a 6-month journey. According to him, quote, should you be fainting with fasting or fatigue, let a small piece of this glue melt in your mouth and you will find yourself surprisingly refreshed. Glue broth. When Lewis and Clark set off to explore North America in 1804, they didn't bring too much with them in the way of food. They were planning on foraging and hunting for a majority of it. However, they did bring 193 pounds of portable soup, a dehydrated mix of eggs, vegetables, and beef broth for dietary emergencies. Records suggest that they didn't have to break it out until 1805. However, apparently it wasn't very good, and the men decided to kill and roast one of the horses instead. So, yeah, not good still. An American-born British physicist named Benjamin Thompson, also known as Count Rumford, who we've talked about before, went about creating something for the Duke of Bavaria, the army. They're arriving at this, like, solidified stock of boiled down meat and trimmings and bones in the 18th century. He went on to set up kitchens and serve this stock to the impoverished and hungry. In 1760, beef tea, a drink made of boiled down beef, was advertised in Dublin as a health tonic. An ad read, when it's cold, decant a pint of beef tea from beef, which looks like a light infusion of fine green tea. It has a very grateful flavor and is more strengthening than stronger broths. Grateful flavor. It was typically viewed as something for the unwell. Florence Nightingale even wrote about beef tea in 1860. Beef tea may be chosen as an illustration of great nutrient power in sickness. There is a certain reparative quality in it. We do not know what, as there is in tea, but it may be safely given in almost any inflammatory disease where much nourishment is required. So, high words from Florence Nightingale. High words. High praise, I suppose.
High praise, yeah.
In the 1850s, a physician wrote, everyone will be struck with the readiness with which certain classes of patients will often take beef tea repeatedly when they refuse all other kinds of food. This is particularly remarkable in the case of gastric fever, in which little or nothing else besides beef tea has been taken for weeks. The result is so striking. What is its mode of action? Possibly it belongs to a new denomination of remedies. However, the tune of physicians was changing by the 1880s when medical experts expressed doubt of the nutritional and health qualities of BT, and even were like, this might be bad for you. So a little shift there. Bouillon, consommés, and broths are thought to have been some of the first items served at some of the very first Western restaurants in the 18th century Paris. In fact, bouillon was often the principal dish at these markets. It was called bouillon restaurant or restorative broth, just like you were talking about earlier, Lauren. And that this whole thing is perhaps where the word restaurant comes from, because the French verb restaurer means to restore oneself.
And note that this wouldn't have been a bouillon from concentrate, but fresh broth or consommé, consommé being a type of clarified broth. At the height of their popularity in the late 18 and early 1900s, there were about 250 of these places in Paris. And their popularity did spread overseas. It was, to a certain extent, it was posh in some parts of the United States through the 1930s to serve a cup of broth alongside lunches and dinners. There were even like these small cups specifically for serving broth in, sometimes with these specialized short-handled spoons that were meant to rest in the cups. But sometimes serving it with a spoon was absolutely wrong. it was a whole thing. Yeah.
Of course it was. and that's a whole thing that gives someone like me a lot of stress, because I'm like, I don't, I just want to get this into my face. Oh, don't laugh at me.
Oh, my medieval times experience. Oh.
No.
Oh, boy. You can listen to that episode for more on that, but basically I burnt the heck out of my mouth because I didn't know what to do with the broth. Dip the bread in it, everyone. Okay. At the request of Napoleon III to find a way to deliver 1 million cans of beef to soldiers fighting in the Franco-Prussian War, Scottish chemist John Lawson Johnston created what he called fluid beef. In 1886, this company was rebranded as Bovril or Bovril, and it took off, becoming a huge part of English culture and identity. I hear it's a big thing at football games in Europe, which we would call soccer here in North America, where you come with the thermos of it. Mm-hmm. Very big pop culture thing. And at one point, the Pope was used in a Bovril ad without his permission. I had to do some digging because a lot of people are like, the Pope, it's the only item the Pope has officially endorsed. From what I can tell, no, did not officially approve that. But was in the ad, yes. The perception of portable soup did change over time. European gentlemen visiting the country during the late 18th century were sometimes encouraged via newspapers to enjoy it, claiming that they would, quote, find it highly convenient to have along with them a few canisters of portable soups by which they can in a few minutes be provided with a wholesome, pleasing, and ready beverage. And in the mid-19th century, chef Alexis Soyer improved upon the recipe for portable soup to use as sustenance for soldiers fighting in the Crimean War. Soyer was heavily involved in military nutrition, devising diets for army hospitals and soldiers for maximum nutrition. He trained military cooks and invented a field stove. His portable soup was called Course Julienne and was sort of a really vegetable-heavy cake. And these cakes did have just a lot of vegetables in them, julienned and dried, 20 pounds of cabbage, carrots and turnips, 15 pounds of onions, 10 pounds of leeks and parsnips, 5 pounds of celery, and 1 pound of mixed seasonings. And when boiled in water, this portable soup cake could feed 100 soldiers. Also, in the 19th century, technological innovations led to canned and dehydrated soups. Three European companies arrived at these innovations around bouillon cubes around the same time, beginning in 1847 with a German chemist named Justus von Liebig, who came up with a method for creating an extract by concentrating beef solids. But at the time, European meat was too expensive for this to be commercially viable.
He was working with, among others, one Karl Heinrich Rithausen, who's credited with first isolating glutamic acid.
Liebig found a cheaper meat source in Uruguay, allowing for his company, which was named Liebig's Extract of Meat Company, to debut a liquid bouillon in 1899 called OXO, or perhaps it's O-X-O. It's all capitalized. I think it's OXO, though. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I don't know either. Yeah.
We tried. We tried to get to the bottom of it. Admittedly, we didn't put too much effort in there, but anyway. At the same time, a German food manufacturer named Karl Heinrich Theodor Knorr was experimenting with dehydrated foods and arrived at dried soups in 1873. And in the 1880s, Julius Mangy, who was a Swiss miller and a food manufacturer that produced dried soups, discovered that meat flavors could be pulled out of wheat using acid hydrolysis. This was a lower cost way to get that meat flavor in dried mixes without the meat. He went on to invent the bouillon cube using acid hydrolysis in 1908 when he introduced it to Europe commercially, although it probably did include at least a little bit of beef extract. OXO and Knorr followed with their own versions of bouillon cubes in 1910.
Yeah, so many brands entered the market in a five-year period that the Journal of Industrial and Engineering Chemistry published an article exploring the chemical content of 10 top brands in 1913.
Yeah, and these cubes quickly spread the world over. OXO provided 100 million foil-wrapped cubes to the British soldiers during World War I. Early advertisements of these cubes claimed that they had health benefits and could improve the taste of dishes. Knorr was available in 8 countries by the 1950s. And I did not go down this rabbit hole, but this rabbit hole does exist of the tin foil wrapping around these cubes and the whole innovation behind that. And I was like, this is so seemingly boring and I want to know everything about it. But Fucho. And another separate episode. But also, in 1908, a Japanese chemist named Ikeda Kikune derived monosodium glutamate, or MSG, which did and does play a big role in bouillon. Kikune came up with the word umami as well.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about this in our artificial flavors episode and in our ramen episode. But yeah, so in parallel to the European development of these portable soups, the drying and preservation of ingredients like kombu or a type of kelp and bonito, a type of fish, for use in this particular type of Japanese broth called dashi broth was developing over the course of thousands of years. And today is available in powdered and liquid concentrates, just like bouillon is. But yeah, I think that that's a kind of separate episode.
Yes. Oh, yes. In the 1930s, food scientist Sir Jack Drummond tried a sample from a cake of portable soup believed to have come from Captain Cook's supplies.
Oh.
Yeah. His review, it, quote, changed very little.
Oh. Well,
which
there you
does
go.
Does not say that it was good. But that it did change very little.
In 1947, Nestle acquired Meiji, leading to global distribution and global expansion of its product lines.
And the term stock cube was first recorded in the 1960s, and I found a very fun paper about why we don't use that in the United States, that term so much, but not really interesting enough to put in here, but I liked it.
Is it something to do with us being really impressed by French cuisine?
Yeah, pretty much. We were like, oh, this sounds fancier. Bouillon sounds fancier, so.
Great. That's the one. Oh, gosh. Yeah, and due to the popularity of bouillon in areas where fresh foods are expensive or otherwise unavailable, or people are short on time for cooking, research has and is currently being done into how we can fortify bouillon with important nutrients like iodine, vitamin A, and iron. And especially doing so, I mean, not just like putting iron in a bouillon cube, but doing it in bioavailable ways to help people out. And I have mixed feelings about this. On the one hand, I think it's great anytime that we can get better nutrition through products that people are already using. And on the other hand, I think it's real weird when companies like, say, Nestle spend a lot of time and research not into improving the types of food available to people, but into making less nutritious.
Souped up bouillon?
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, there's our title. The souped up bouillon episode. Well,
sometimes the titles come to you and you can't say no. It's just the natural order
it
of
is.
The pun title.
It is. That's just it. That's just where it lives sometimes. Goodness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what we have to say about bouillon for today.
It is, but we do have some listener mail for you.
But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts? Time ends. Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
A nice warm hug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amanda wrote, I am sorry I keep bothering you with emails, but your recent Pokemon food episode, particularly your rant regarding removing Slowpoke's tails, reminded me of a real-life food. There is something called a stone crab in which the fishermen harvest one or both of the crab's claws, releasing the crab back to regrow the missing claws. This was slightly horrifying to young 20-something me, but we had to try it. There is a place in Miami, Joe's Stone Crab, where we had the most delicious meal and were treated just delightfully by our server despite showing up underdressed for the occasion. I would highly recommend it if you're in the area. There also was, 4 years ago when we visited, a takeout market next door where you could instead pick up to eat on the beach or wherever. I also wanted to thank you for all the recent listener mail episodes. Every time I spot one in my feed, I audibly shout at my phone in joy, heart emoji. Aww. The content of your regular episodes is just wonderful, but I must admit the listener mail episodes are just my favorite thing. Oh, lastly, regarding coffee, I just had to share/brag that I found a local roaster with a coffee subscription, and he will deliver you locally roasted coffee monthly or biweekly for a reasonable price. It's been one of the best things ever, with it being so difficult to grocery shop with the little ones. I also found a website that will deliver, among hundreds of other foods and items locally made, frozen dim sum. Haha, yes. But it's so great to just have a stash in the freezer for me and the 5-year-old when we are craving some. Oh, I want all the crabs and the dim sum and the coffee. Oh.
Yes.
I can't wait to do a crab episode. I am so ready because crabs are weird. And they do this thing called a jubilee, and I've got to know more about it.
Okay.
I just got you.
All right, upcoming crab episode. Into it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And now I'm wondering if we need to do like multiple crab episodes, if we need to like, yeah.
Yeah. I think they're weird enough that we could split it up.
Well, you know, we'll do the initial reading.
Mm-hmm.
See what it seems like. Mm-hmm. And if we need more than one crab episode, who am I? Who am I to deny the world of crabs?
You don't want to. They mean they will pinch you.
I've seen the gif of the one with the knife. I'm not gonna tell it different.
Yes.
Oh heck. Shannon wrote, I had to write in about the Scrapple episode. While I've never eaten it, I do have fond childhood memories about it. I live in Maryland, and every summer when driving to Ocean City on the eastern shore of Maryland, we would cut through part of Delaware to get there. One of the small towns we would drive through was Bridgeville, home of Rapa Scrapple. My siblings and I had a game about who could spot the Rapa Scrapple sign first. We grew up in the 80s or 90s and had to find a way to entertain ourselves besides car bingo during the 3-hour drive. Seeing the sign was exciting because it let us know we were getting closer to arriving at the beach. I also remember the smell of Scrapple cooking when my grandmom would cook it for breakfast during our week at the beach. It's not a smell you forget, smiley face.
I continue to love all these Scrapple emails.
Yes.
They keep coming. Keep them coming. I also had a game. We had a sign-based game when I was a kid. There's this restaurant in Gulf Shores, and there's one in Missouri, too. Anyway, it's called Lambert's Cafe, and they throw rolls at you. It's like their thing.
Oh, yeah.
And their signs were upside down, but that's how we always knew we were getting close to the beach.
When those signs started
appearing. It took me years to convince my family to finally go, because my dad was like, why would you pay to have someone throw food at you? But he loved it. Once we went, he loved it.
Yeah, it sounds charming. It sounds perfectly nice.
Those rolls are good.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
That's all you need. That's all you. One time I asked, I was like, can I just get the rolls? Because they sort of come with the meal. Just throw them at you. They're like, you've got to get something.
Something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, my dad used to tell me to keep my eyes peeled, like when I was really young. And I would put my hand over my eyes and just like narrow them and look. And that would keep me entertained for car rides. And it was like a running joke that I didn't get why that was so silly. He told me to keep my eyes peeled. I was looking around.
You were only following instructions.
That's right. Looking for any suspicious license plates, because I was like, oh, what are you doing here? Delaware. Thanks, as always, to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taíno, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.